it just rejects the idea of a pregnant person as a human, that you can force them to go through something that is, that we know has health consequences, that we know has an impact on their mental health.
The United States Supreme Court has overturned the constitutional right to abortion. Ruling in the case Dobbs v. Jackson Women's Health Organization, the court went beyond Mississippi's request to allow it to ban abortion after 15 weeks pregnancy and instead fully overturned the two previous Supreme Court rulings, Roe and Casey, that had for 49 years made it unconstitutional to outlaw abortion's pre-viability, that is, before a fetus could survive outside the womb at around 24 to 26 weeks. Now, states will be able to restrict and ban abortion at any point in pregnancy, and 58% of US women of reproductive age live in states hostile to abortion. Several states moved to eliminate access to abortion immediately after the decision was delivered on the 24th of June 2022. When the draft majority opinion was leaked to the press in May, Global Insight spoke to four experts about the impact of the decision, human rights law on abortion, the journey to this moment, and wider repercussions. Risa Kaufman, director of US Human Rights at the Center for Reproductive Rights, which brought the case at hand, spoke to us ahead of the decision.
It is the most extreme version of what the court could do, which is to overrule Roe and allow states to ban abortion at any point in pregnancy. And it ignores women and pregnant people and how they're impacted by abortion bans. Yeah, so the anti-abortion movement has been trying for decades to push abortion out of reach for as many people as possible. In the early 2010s, state legislatures began to pass severe abortion restrictions like admitting privileges laws, which we challenged. And then several years later, they escalated to outright abortion bans early in pregnancy, really teeing this question up for the court, teeing up the opportunity for the court to overrule almost 50 years of precedent. So the abortion rights movement has been warning of this possibility for years. So it is critical that we not sit still or stay silent while the right to abortion and our other fundamental human rights are rolled back. So we'll build stronger protections at the state level and also at the federal level to defend against further regression. We'll build more protections and work towards the day when every person has access to the healthcare they need. It's more important than ever that Congress pass federal legislation, including the Women's Health Protection Act, to protect the right to abortion in the United States, regardless of where a person lives. And it's also really important that voters support lawmakers who really commit to protecting abortion rights and access, as well as ballot measures that support access.
Akila Radhakrishnan is president of the Global Justice Center, which works globally to further reproductive rights and justice.
You know, we're going to face an absolute crisis of care in certain states. And, you know, as a result of this, those states that will be absorbing the overflow are also themselves going to be put into crisis. This is something that there are a lot of lessons learned from the Irish example here on what travel looks like, the impact of travel on the ability to access abortion, who can access it, the costs of it, always seen a disproportionate impact on marginalized communities. You can look at issues like the maternal mortality rates of Black women in the United States as opposed to other populations. And it's a clear, clear indicator of who is going to be the most impacted in this context. But we also need to, I think a part of what helped us get here is complacency and the idea that some of us are going to be okay. And frankly, this is not an okay situation for anybody, especially as we, you know, look towards what this is mobilizing in terms of a potential federal ban on abortion if we, you know, subsequent elections don't go our way. And so it's really important that even as we understand and make clear and make plans for mitigating the harm on those who are going to be most affected, that we also understand that this is something that's going to have an impact on everybody across the country. I think at this point, we should say Roe wasn't even that great. You know, the viability framework, it is an important benchmark of protection, but it was complicated. right? And it doesn't actually meet human rights standards. Human rights standards indicate entirely towards no regulations on abortion. And if you take a look at the new WHO manual that just came out a few months ago, which I did work on the law and policy group, but you see the recommendations that came out of there, right? You look at this integration of a health and human rights perspective, and the new WHO manual recommends that abortion is fully decriminalized, that there are no gestational limits on abortion, there are no third-party restrictions on abortion, that conscientious objection cannot be used to deny access to abortion. So our focus is going to be on bringing this international human rights lens to this conversation. Those in the United States have long believed that human rights are for others and not for us here. And I think it's going to be an important part of a larger strategy as we watch, you know, a range of, right, of civil and human rights fall apart in this country.
Mark Stevens, CBE, co-chair of the IBA Human Rights Institute, reiterates human rights law on abortion.
Under human rights law, the denial of medical services, including reproductive health services that only certain individuals need, i.e. women, is a form of discrimination. The UN has made this clear in the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women, known as the CEDAW Treaty. And it's consistently stated that restrictive abortion laws constitute discrimination against women. This applies to all women who, or people who are capable of becoming pregnant. But there are other things. So people have a right to health, a right to be free from violence, discrimination, torture, cruel and inhuman and degrading treatment. And, you know, so for example, requiring a woman to carry a baby to term has been defined in international human rights law as cruel, inhuman, and degrading treatment, or potentially capable of that. The obligation on states in international law, and that of course includes the courts as an arm of the state, are to remove legal provisions, including criminal laws, which penalize women who have undergone abortion or medical practitioners who offer these services. So the state has to protect those rights. A state must also organize their healthcare system to ensure that women are not prevented from accessing health services by health professionals. And states have an obligation, thirdly, to ensure access to appropriate healthcare services for women, to eliminate barriers to the prevention of abortion services that lead women to resort to unsafe abortions, including eliminating unacceptable delays in providing medical attention. These kinds of restrictions, whether it's 15 weeks or not, are there to create barriers and hurdles to a woman exercising their rights as they should, freely and as an individual. The right to an abortion is an absolute right of a woman to choose. This is an area where passions run high, but as lawyers, we've got to step back dispassionately and look at these matters. And a fetus it isn't a human being. It isn't a viable human being at that point. And therefore, the rights of the viable human being, namely the woman carrying the baby, are the only human rights which are engaged. Now, that's often to people who are anti-abortion, a challenging statement to make, but it is the correct statement of law.
A Texas abortion ban, enacted in 2021 and enforced with civil lawsuits, wiped out reproductive health care in the state. Radhakrishnan stresses that similar restrictions being brought in by states following this decision may undermine access to life-saving healthcare and even enable prosecutions for pregnancy outcomes. But other rights may be threatened by the Dobbs case too. Although the majority opinion claims no other rights are impacted, a concurring opinion from Justice Thomas explicitly calls for the court to overturn cases that protect gay marriage and contraception.
You look at what Alito's decision does, right? It overturns the idea that rights that are not deeply entrenched within the Constitution have privacy protections. So look at the other rights that have been found under privacy, the privacy doctrine, right? Including contraception, including anti-sodomy laws and gay marriage. You have, or you're creating a constitutional framework for, you know, challenging those laws when you lay out a decision that's this broad and sweeping. So while SCOTUS isn't doing that on its own in this case, what is going to prevent someone from utilizing what is essentially being gifted, you know, given as a gift of a baseline of a challenge to these constitutional protections? We do wonder if in this heightened space that we're in, we're going to see active pursuit of criminalization, particularly in those states that are banning abortion. And I think that is something to stay really concerned about, right? Because if they do make the prescription of medication abortion illegal, if they make having an abortion criminally illegal, then if people are able to access pills, which are safe, but then they perhaps have any complications, they may be afraid to go to the hospital for fear of criminalization. If they go to the hospital, they may be criminalized. Miscarriage is quite a common outcome of pregnancy, right? And so for all of those who do naturally miscarry, you may be faced to scrutiny and questioning and potential criminalization. We already saw one case of that in Texas, a case where a woman had a miscarriage and they actually did call the cops and have her arrested for self-managing an abortion. So I think that it's only natural that we're going to start seeing some of this be tied up in other issues like contraception. And, you know, there's also doctors who've been talking about the potential impact of things like if you start having personhood laws, right, that grant fetal rights at conception or at fertilization, not conception, sorry. You know, what does that mean in terms of emergency contraception or IUDs? Like there's kind of different ways in which contraception can be impacted. Those are all, I think, knock-on effects that we're going to start seeing probably sooner rather than later.
Matt Kaiser, Vice Chair of the IBA Criminal Law Committee, expands on the possibilities of criminalized abortion in the United States.
I really think there are sort of three questions that will be interesting as this develops. You know, one is, will providers or either doctors or other people who facilitate and help women get abortions, whether they'll be prosecuted? The second is whether women themselves will be prosecuted for receiving an abortion in a state that outlaws it. And the third will be around travel restrictions. There have been proposals in a couple of states to make it illegal, whether criminal or not, to go to a different state to receive an abortion. I think there are really problematic constitutional issues with that. Nonetheless, you know, states are going to try, and that's going to have to get litigated. And as we saw with the Texas law, like who knows where people's rights are going to be while that gets litigated. So I think a lot of the action is going to be criminalizing providers or people who facilitate. There's also been talk about a federal legislation that would criminalize abortion across the country. It's hard for me to see that being the most extreme criminalization of every woman who has an abortion at any time. The anti-choice movement has talked about that being, if the Republicans take the White House in 2024 and sweep Congress, that being one of the measures they're going to start pushing for. You know, one would think that there will be health of the mother exceptions regardless. Whether they're broader or narrow, you could see being a very complicated question that legislators will think they're in the best position to decide. But then you could have criminal trials that are really just conflicting medical testimony about, you know, in this situation, how necessary was it to save the life of the mother? And it will be sort of the worst of how prosecution is done. One concern people have about the American criminal justice system is it creates incentives, especially at the state level where prosecutors are elected and where prosecutors are really often ambitious politicians. If they're able to do politically popular prosecutions of women or women of color, I think they'll start doing them more aggressively.